Matthew 14, 22 to 33. This is an interesting episode for a number of reasons. One of them is that Matthew gives us more detail than anybody else. Now, there are a couple of other details that the others give us, but none of them mention Peter walking on the water. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure what Matthew has in mind, in making sure we know that detail. Mark uses the story to describe the hardness of heart of the disciples. And as we've talked many times as we've gone through the Gospel of Mark, you know that one of the things that keeps happening is Jesus tries to tell them what he's going to do, and they go, yeah, okay. They just don't really get it. It doesn't sink in. And obviously this morning we were talking about the fact that they wanted to be in the power structure, which I'm sure they didn't fully understand that that wasn't a part of what his ministry was going to be, at least at that point. Now, when John gives us some details about this, he almost puts it in there as an aside to the narrative. You know, and looking at it from the standpoint of, trying to put all the material together or writing it down, he doesn't make much of it. I'm not even sure why he puts it in there. It's almost like it's just a transition from one point to the next. Luke does not even give us this occasion. He doesn't even mention that Jesus walked on the water. So, you know, it's hard to know exactly why they don't do it. We can only speculate on what their reasons were or recording the material the way they did. But I want you to think about it this way, or I want you to think about it a certain way this morning. We're going to kind of try to look at this kind of geographically. I don't know if that's exactly the right way to say it, but there's three places that we see Jesus. We see him up on the mountain, we see him on the water, and then we see him in the boat. And I realize that's probably not some deep theological way of, giving you the material. But hopefully it's helpful. You know, just follow him along on his journey. And we're going to try our best to think about what Jesus is thinking during this. A lot of times we'd like to think of ourselves in the narrative. You know, we talk about, being one of the disciples and putting ourselves there and experience it. We're going to do the best we can to think about why Jesus is doing what he's doing. Okay? So think of it that way this morning. Where we begin is up on the mountain. In verse 22, it says Jesus dismisses the crowd and the disciples. Jesus wants to be by himself. We know there's a number of reasons he's done that. There are times when the gospel writers will say, well, Jesus and the disciples needed to go away to get some rest. You know, the crowds were always around them. You know, do you guys get home from work and you just want to go be by yourself for a little while? You know, you don't want everything and everybody pressing you. You've kind of just had enough. That seems to be part of the reason at times. But John adds some very intriguing details about this section here. After feeding the 5,000, which he has just done in Matthew 14, John notes that people believed that he was the prophet. And that was something the Jews believed in because of what Moses said back in the book of Deuteronomy, that a prophet was going to come. And so John says, you know what they wanted? You know what the crowd wanted to do? They wanted to come and make him king by force. Most people wouldn't probably resist that. You know, knowing our desire to be, you know, on the top of the heap, some of us just, okay, I'm it, baby, let's go. Jesus does not want that, so he goes off by himself. It's kind of interesting, you know, why they would have done that, at least at that point. If, in fact, they believed Jesus was going to be a military leader, feeding 5,000 people was going to be something that was extremely important to a military leader. It's called logistics, moving from place to place and being able to feed your army. Jesus would have been able to feed them no matter where they were. I don't know if that's what they're thinking about, other than they see this miraculous thing and they go, hey, this is the guy. And Jesus says, I'm getting out of here. He goes off. Jesus took a quick exit, although Matthew makes no mention about that particular detail here. So what is Jesus thinking? He goes up the mountain to pray. And he notes some very interesting details, but let's think a minute. Why now? Why does he send the disciples off and dismiss the crowds? Why does he do that right now? It could be because, okay, he's trying to get away from them because they're going to try to make him king. What might he have been praying about this night? Was he tempted to succumb to being a mighty ruler, as many expected the Son of Man was going to be? I realize I'm speculating here. We're putting ourselves in Jesus' mind. What was he doing? Why did he feel like it was important to go off by himself right then? We know that Jesus often went to solitary places to pray. It was his habit. He did it pretty frequently. And perhaps that was just, you know, okay, it's time for me to go off by myself and pray. Very interesting, the details though here. Number one, he was by himself. And he was alone. Now, Matthew repeats himself, basically. If he's by himself, he's alone. But Matthew seems to want us to understand that detail. I don't know if this was Jesus' way, or at least Matthew's way of reinforcing what Jesus had already said earlier about going into your room and closing the door so that God sees in secret. You know, for Jesus, he didn't have a room, so he went up on the mountain. It could very well be that. I'm going to use that, by the way, in our life group today, because I want you to think about that, how important it is for Jesus to go by himself and just be him and God, him and his Father, speaking together, talking. He apparently spends quite a bit of time at it. Anyway, he's up there one-on-one with just God. But at some point during the evening, it's time for him to go and I guess catch up to the disciples. So the next place we see him is on the water. Why does Jesus walk on the water? And I'm not trying to be devil's advocate here. I'm really asking the question. I guess this was a question I asked myself this week. Why does he do this? What is the point? In Mark chapter 6 and verse 48, Mark says he meant to pass them by. Matthew doesn't add that detail. But Mark does. He meant to just go right by them. Other than to get to the other side of the lake where he would meet up with them, does this miraculous thing serve any other purpose? Well, I know what happens and I know how the disciples react to it and perhaps that becomes the purpose. But if he's wanting to just pass them by, it looks like going to where he was going to go by walking across the water was just the quickest way to get from point A to point B. Is it as pragmatic as that? Is that all Jesus is trying to do? Kind of that's what it looks like. I can be wrong on that. I kind of wonder if he wasn't just having a little fun. Do you ever think of Jesus as maybe having fun occasionally? Yeah, think about it. He's walking on the water. And not only is he walking on the water, it's not calm, but it's like this. It's wavy. I don't know if this was his version of riding a roller coaster or not, but each step, I don't know, maybe it was each step he took, you know, flattened the water out. Who knows? For some reason, Jesus decides, I'm going to go meet up with him. I'm just going to walk across the water. Hey, I can do it. Why not do it? Again, you know, I don't want to pretend to know Jesus' motivation or put thoughts in his head that maybe sound a little bit not what Jesus really is. But this miracle is just kind of odd. You know, he didn't really have to do this. And yet he goes and he just walks on the water. He just, I don't know, does it because he can? Well, we learn something from it, and that's what's perhaps the best thing that we can do here, because we have some dialogue that goes here. He's walking across the lake, and the disciples are in the boat. What happens? They see him. And what's their first thought? Ghost. It's a ghost! Jesus must have heard them crying out, okay? You know, and some of these guys are experienced sailors. So I don't know what other kind of things they might have seen on the water, or you know, there's always these, you know, sailors love to tell stories about things. You know, and you're out on a boat, it's late at night, it's dark, and the waves are crashing over the boat. All of a sudden you see a figure on the water, and he's like, what is that? Where did that come from? You know, think about the disciples here. Have you ever had anything that where the kind of hair on the back of your neck stood up? You know, you just feel this, and everything tenses up. It's like, what is going on here? That's what's happening to the disciples. And Jesus can see it. He can hear them hollering, you know, saying something. And perhaps he can see them getting restless in the boat and not knowing what to do, standing up maybe in the boat. And he says, take it easy. It's just me. You know, he says, take heart. It is I. Do not be afraid. Maybe that's our version of don't get excited. It's just me. You know, somebody comes into your room and who is that? It's just me. Just settle down. It's just me. So it's like, it's you. You who? What are you doing on the water? We're not talking about somebody walking into your room or walking into the house and you don't expect them. We're talking about somebody walking on the water. Who expects that? All right. And so Peter says, all right, if it is you, let me come to you. Jesus says, and I'm going to give it in sort of the way I would say it. Come on in. The water's fine. You know, that's the way we might say it if we're in the pool. Come on in. The water's fine. He just says, come. The next dialogue we hear is what? Lord, save me. Because Peter is sinking. And the next dialogue we hear from Jesus is, why did you doubt? Peter, what were you worried about? If I was Peter, I'd have probably wanted to say, drowning? I was worried about drowning? Okay. I was on the water. And it was pretty violent out there. So I started to sink. I was worried about drowning. And yet Jesus does kind of chasten Peter here, doesn't he? What were you worried about? Why did you doubt? Well, Jesus gets in the boat. That's the next place we see him. Verses 32 and 33. Now, it's very interesting because there was a previous event where they were on the water and Jesus calmed the storm. He didn't have to get out and walk on the water for this one, but he calmed the storm. Their response to that was, who is this guy? Remember that? They don't say, you're the Son of God. They all just look at him and like, who can do that? Who can calm the... Who can control nature? Wow. That's a good question. They move a step beyond this in this particular dialogue and they say, truly, you are the Son of God. Matthew records no more dialogue here. So you get this, if you were to read just the dialogue, it's a ghost, take heart, it's I, don't be afraid. If it is you, let me come to you. Come, Lord save me. What are you worried about? You're the Son of God. Pretty sparse dialogue there. You know, moving from thing to thing about what's actually going on here. What's interesting about this particular statement that Matthew has in the mouth of the disciples, this occurred before Peter makes his confession later on. This one sounds pretty complete before he even gets to Peter and before he asks the disciples, who do you say that I am? So there's something sort of odd about this, to me at least, because this seems a little premature. Because later on, when they say, who's everybody saying I am? You know, well, everybody's saying you're the prophet or you're John the Baptist or you're Elijah. Well, Jesus says, who do you say that I am? And that's when Peter makes his confession. Maybe they all kind of sensed it right here. I'm not really sure. How do we account for this? How do we account for this statement of theirs? Was it something just sort of impulsive? Hey, this guy was walking on the water. He must be something really special. And so they make a confession here. In fact, Matthew notes this, in their making that statement, it was an issue of worship. They worshiped him by saying that. Did they retain this belief? Is that why Jesus later on has to confirm that? He has to ask them later, well, who do you say that I am? It's almost like Jesus would have been thinking later, well, I know what you said out on the boat. Do you still believe that? Did they know what they were saying here? I mean, did it really sink in at this point? I'm going to guess Jesus is still not sure it sank in. That's why he asked them a little bit later. And perhaps it's just a simple matter of what we do sometimes. Sometimes they uttered it with their lips, but still took a little time to reside in their hearts. Isn't that what we see the disciples do? They make confessions, they make commitments, they want to do this. Peter seems to be the one that speaks for them more often. When push came to shove, they ran away. You know, and that's probably the pattern of humanity. And so they're making a really good statement here. They've just had an experience that sort of, maybe intuitively, it just kind of came out. And it was correct. Make no mistake about it. I'm not questioning whether or not it was right. It was the right thing to say. Because it clearly demonstrated who Jesus was. Maybe Jesus did walk on the water for that reason. Because it would evoke some faith in them. Maybe that was his reason, rather than just, I'm going to go get from point A to point B. They worshipped him. But think about the things we can learn from this little episode, this little geographical journey we've taken. On the mountain, prayer was extremely important to Jesus, was it not? Very often, he had to go off by himself. That is a very, I think, significant feature. He went by himself to pray. Just him and his Father. Again, we're going to talk about that a little bit in our life group today, how important it is to go into our room by ourselves, and it's just us and God. Can't hide from God, can you? No matter how much you want to try, no matter how much you can be around a lot of other people, you can hide from that. You really can't hide from God. It was important for Jesus to pray. Was it for his own development? Maybe. Was it for the disciples? I'm sure that was in there. Was it for the mission? No doubt in my mind. Anyway, that's what Jesus was doing on the mountain. How about on the water? What do we learn from Jesus being on the water? Well, again, let's just even put aside why Jesus did it. It was Peter who decided he wanted to go out with him. Peter wants to exercise his faith. And Peter, unfortunately, as we well know, focused not so much on Jesus, but on the storm around him. The writer in the book of Hebrews has a very interesting statement to make, I think, in regard to this, because he is addressing, apparently, some people in the early centuries who appears are on the verge of falling away. Maybe they're on the verge of doing what Peter did. They're on the verge of sinking in their faith. Listen to what he says. Well, actually, we're going to read it later, but I'm going to read it now as well. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising its shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. I believe some of your translations will say, fix your eyes on Jesus. And isn't that really what Peter should have done or should have been doing? You know, I know we're always a little critical of Peter, but hey, man, Peter was aggressive. Peter was willing. Even if he was weak at times, he was willing. But Jesus says to him, what were you afraid of? Why did you doubt? Keep your eyes on Jesus. Pretty good message. And you know, there are a lot of things that distract us. I was reading a couple of articles this week in a magazine about pain and how we deal with pain. And there's sometimes a very strong emotional component to it that, you know, we're worried about feeling pain. And it does hurt. The physical part aside, athletes, when they're in pain in whatever endeavor they're trying to conquer, it's really a mental thing for them. And they have to overcome the mental part of the pain they're feeling in order to get to the next level. I think that's what runners feel when they feel this. It's called the runner's high. They kind of reach a plateau, but they got to get through this part where it's really, really hurts and it's really hard and I don't want to go any further. And they have to be able to say to themselves, you got to keep going. And I kind of wonder if maybe sometimes our faith isn't a little bit like that. If we fix our eyes on Jesus, we can kind of keep going, can't we? That's the point. With Jesus, we can keep going. That's not to say that pain is just ignore it, it's an illusion. It's not, because it does hurt. But the fact is, on the water, when we see the storms, we can fix our eyes on Jesus. And how about in the boat? The conclusion to this episode that Matthew portrays for us, even if this statement seems a little premature and they didn't fully grasp how it fits with the rest of the story, it's still a true statement. For us, it is true. Jesus is the Son of God. And we can make that statement with them, and hopefully we can keep that statement. And the time we're tempted not to look at Jesus, we still have that, our own profession of faith. It's important for us to understand that. Because if he really is the Son of God, we can really fix our eyes on him, and that gives us the strength to complete whatever task we have. Staying a disciple is the main thing, is it not? And so my encouragement today is pray. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Make the confession and stick to it. Floyd, shall we stand and sing?